listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio, and I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, always keeping you safe during any healthcare or hospital encounter. But what about your financial health? Have you given much thought to that? Well, today, our guest is going to share his wisdom when it comes to improving our financial health. He is Brian Beatty, a financial planner and partner of Egan Berger & Weiner, located in Northern Virginia. Brian has 22 years of experience in the financial industry as the principal of an independent financial services firm specializing in all aspects of investment and retirement planning. He is a graduate of the University of Maryland with a BS in finance, former president of the Finance, Banking, and Investment Society, a certified financial planner practitioner. He's also an active member of the Financial Planning Association's Career Development and College Outreach Committees. And as an avid lifelong musician, Brian plays the guitar and writes music in his spare time. And that sounds like fun to me to have a musical financial planner. So it's a pleasure to have you and your expertise with us today, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Well, we're usually all about health, but I don't think one could be a healthy person if their financial situation is at risk or is not in tip-top shape. So let's talk about that. When it comes to good health, having a healthy retirement plan is obviously the key. Tell us why that is so very important to us.
One of the things that you want to make sure that you can do, I think that you'd probably agree with me here, is that you want to make sure that no matter what you do in your retirement years, you can stay independent. And staying independent requires you to have a plan on how you would tackle any downturns in your health, especially those which might actually wind up taking you into an extended stay in some sort of a nursing home, or if you were to move into senior living where you would need to be able to have some assistance in getting around. And, of course, that's not cheap. And for most folks who have assets of their own, they will not have that paid for by the state, by the federal government, or by their health insurance. And so it's important to understand, you know, what happens when you retire? How does Medicare work? How does Medicaid work? How does Social Security work? And then on top of that, when does insurance pay and when does it not pay?
It's a very scary thing to think that you have all of your ducks in a row and everything in order. And yes, then you have a catastrophic health situation that just wipes everything out. How can we really plan for that?
Well, one of the first things you want to do is you want to understand what it is you actually have in play. By that, I mean, how much of your income is guaranteed? You know, do you have a pension? How much of your income is going to come from Social Security? Did you choose a option in Social Security that maximizes that benefit to both your living spouse, or if you were to be the surviving spouse, did you make sure that you left the surviving spouse the largest amount? And this really requires you to do a comprehensive financial plan. I'll be honest with you, most people in their entire lifetime will not do a comprehensive financial plan. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, it's kind of like going to the doctor and finding out there's something wrong. Yeah. Maybe you don't want to know.
Yeah, it just seems like a big step, and you're right. If everything seems to be going along fine right now, just kind of close your eyes and we'll worry about it at some other point in time. But obviously, that is not the smart thing to do. So what are the top three things we need to do to get our retirement plan in good shape?
Well, the first thing I would suggest you do is take a look at the cost of Medicare. Although Medicare Part A is free, Medicare has multiple components. So make sure you understand what it's going to cost you if you will have to, if you want Part D, which is the drug prescription program, you will have to sign up for Part B, and you can't wait. You're going to have to do that right as you turn 65. Otherwise, there's a penalty for the rest of your life for not having taken it right away. So understand what it's going to cost and make sure that's part of your budget when you think about how much I'm going to live on when I retire. Interestingly enough, it was just a news article put out in the last couple of days related to the fact that there's no COLA on Social Security this year. Mm-hmm. And there's a little sort of loophole, if you will, that says that Social Security recipients cannot have their benefit reduced in any year, regardless of the COLA. And since there was no COLA, Medicare premiums are scheduled to rise by 50% next year, so anybody already collecting Social Security and paying their premium out of their Social Security will not see an adjustment to their Medicare premiums. But everybody else who's on delay or has yet to claim Social Security is going to watch their Medicare premiums go up by as much as 50% next year. So I think it's important to understand that healthcare insurance in retirement is not just Part A, but it's also Part B, Part D, and you need to know what is it going to cost. The more you make, the more it costs. It is prorated for means testing, and I think that that's number one. Number two, you need to understand long-term care scenarios. when does long-term care scenario kick in? Is it defined by a healthcare incident, or is it defined by some sort of more of a disability incident? And then who pays? Is it you? How much does it cost? And, you know, is it only in-home, or am I going to have to go into a facility? And lastly, what about your heirs? Is it important to you that they not see you like that, that they care for you, that you stay home as long as you can? Do you have your advanced directives, your medical powers, your durable powers of attorney? How is the next generation going to take care of you when you can't take care of yourself? Those are the three biggies.
I want to step back for a moment. When you mentioned COLA, in case our listeners don't know, cost of living adjustment. So you're saying that that cost of living adjustment is not going to be made?
There is a zero COLA or cost of living adjustment in Social Security going into 2016.
Interesting. All right. Something to keep in mind. And I like that you mentioned long-term care insurance, but that's very, very important to read and understand that policy and know what you're purchasing.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And then for your heirs and advanced directives, we talk about that all the time on the show, because that's a pretty scary thing to, say, land in the hospital, not have any kind of healthcare power of attorney. So then who is the person that's going to make those medical decisions for you? And you surely don't want for that to go to probate court. So I think we should stress
not only
that as well.
Who, but what?
What?
Did you already make that decision? And is the hospital not willing to follow it? Because they don't know that you didn't intend to be on a machine or have your life extended. So it's what as well.
Yes, I agree. I agree. Excellent. Those are great three tips. So in order to be successful financially for our long-term plans, we can't just rely on our working income. Hopefully we're making some investments along the way. And again, that's a kind of a scary thing for most people because it's just not something they're accustomed to. So help us with that. What is the most important thing we can do or that we consider when we're making an investment?
Well, I think the thing that people need to consider more than anything else is longevity. And longevity is this fancy word everybody throws around. Some people call it a life expectancy bonus. And it gets all these nice soft terms, but you're going to live a lot longer in retirement than your parents did. Certainly a lot longer than your grandparents did, and you're going to have to figure out how you're going to make your income last. And if all you're doing is making investments into bank accounts or fixed income investments, the returns are quite low. They're related very closely to the federal funds rate, which is currently at near 0%. Mm-hmm. It's been there for 7 years. If you're not making a return on your money is not going to last. And you need to make your money last at least as long as you do.
So I asked you what the most important thing was to consider. Is there anything that we should ignore?
Yeah, you should ignore short-term fluctuations. You should probably turn off CNBC. You probably shouldn't watch Fox Business. For the most part, you should have a plan of solid or sound asset allocation strategy, which is broad asset class diversification, bonds, stocks, international, U.S., also some alternatives in one portfolio that's geared around the risk of your own personal taste, which you'll probably need help doing. But once you have that, you need to stop paying such close attention because markets go up over time, but in the short run, they can really cause a lot of ulcers and bad behavior.
I agree. So when we see the market rising and falling, I know that you write a lot about what's called behavioral finance and why people aren't so good at keeping their emotions in check. So what are some of the problems that you see and what can we do to curb our instinct to immediately react to those market changes other than turn the TV off?
Oh, absolutely. So two of the big ones, the first I actually wrote about last month in our newsletter to our clients is anchoring. And anchoring is a phenomena which we do usually with difficult concepts where we're trying to place some sort of a relevance to it. And we think back to the most well-known source of information. So if you're driving home in your car every day and you have talk radio on, and they'll mention the S&P 500 or the Dow. And every time they talk about how the market's doing, they talk about these indexes, which are very narrow. And we tend to anchor our performance against this well-known index, whether it may have any relevance to our portfolio or not, who knows. Mm-hmm. But we tend to measure our performance incorrectly by anchoring to incorrect information. So that's one common way we make mistakes. And the other is by developing what's known as a recency bias. And everybody does this. But we tend to remember the most recent information readily. So, for example, if last year the best investment was United States large cap stocks, and if that had been the same for 2 or 3 years in a row, we're going to start to think that that's what we should own. And so we start to aggregate or drift or collect a lot of our investments into the same asset class that has performed well recently, over-concentrating and creating more risk for our portfolio, just as that asset class, for example, U.S., might turn south and other asset classes would have done well, like real estate or bonds. That's a very common trait. It's called recency bias.
Recency bias. Oh, I like that. That's good to keep in mind. Yeah. Now, you also write about the ability to tolerate risk. What can we do to get a handle on that? How would we know if we, well, I guess we would know if we're big risk takers or not, but how should we weigh all of that when making our investments?
One of the largest components to risk is the amount of time in which someone has to recover.
Mm-hmm.
So just as a rule of thumb, if you're getting older, it's obvious you cannot take as much risk. But there are still some people that don't understand how to quantify risk. I would say that the way to quantify risk is not to ask how much money I can make, but rather how much money you can lose. And it's not always clear how much money one can lose, but if you look at your investment's historical performance, you have to look at the worst times. So in 2008, if you made a very similar investment, in 2008, how far did it fall? Did it fall the same as the market being the S&P 500, did it fall further than the market? And then how long did it take it to recover? Now, not every investment recovers, but if you own a broad asset class or a side portfolio, it will recover. How long did that take? Did it take 24 months? Did it take 36 months? How patient can you afford to be or will you be? So I would say time is one thing people are have difficulty measuring, and the other is how far they'll allow it to decline before they say, I quit, I don't care, get me out.
So yeah, you need to think about how much time you have to recover. And I would imagine that diversification is somewhat important. How important is that?
Well, diversification is extremely important because if you place too much money in one investment, and let's just suppose, for instance, I know Apple is a very favorite stock of folks. I like Apple. I have an iPad, and I love what Apple has done for technology and for the industry. But if for some reason Apple made a mistake with their business management decisions, or if there was some sort of a poor leadership that took place, you could lose your entire investment because of management, or what we call business risk. So you need to make sure that you're not overly concentrated with business risk by having too much tied up into one or very few numbers of companies or industries, since you have to make sure that you're broadly diversified. That way, mistakes of management are diversified away. Mm-hmm. Now you're really dealing more with market risk. And market risk is, what's the environment like? Is it a good time or is it a bad time? And then what you have to determine is whether the investments that you hold rise equally with the market and decline equally with the market, or if they're, in fact, take more risk, decline more, or increase more with the market. Diversification eliminates business risk, but it doesn't eliminate market risk.
Market risk, right.
Market risk is that, how long can I wait for it to recover because it's a bad time?
Mm-hmm.
But diversification is extremely important.
As we're talking, I realize that we obviously cannot do this alone. I can't sit here by myself and try to figure all this out and create my financial plan alone. Let's talk about that.
I would agree with you. I'm somewhat biased,
yes.
Obviously. Here's what I would say about that. Don't just choose anyone, but choose someone. And what I mean by that, it's the equivalent of saying, you know, I'm going to go exercise and I'm going to diet. And then you go on the first day after the new year with your New Year's resolution, you go to the gym and maybe you pull a muscle or maybe you work too hard and you're sore and you wind up drifting after three or four workouts and you lose sight of your overall plan and you don't go to the gym. But if you'd hired a coach on January 2nd, you probably would stay in the gym longer. Matter of fact, you probably not only would have stayed in the gym longer, you will probably have lost more weight, made more progress. And in fact, you just the sense of guilt alone that someone is watching you
mm-hmm.
will make you actually more responsible. Someone's holding you accountable. That component, I think, is pretty easy to understand. But more importantly, how will this individual that you work with, how will they get paid and how will they charge you? And are they independent and are they transparent? So today there's a lot of conversation around the concept of fiduciary standard of care. Our industry, meaning financial services, unfortunately, there's not one standard of care. There's you know, client's best interest, and then there is suitability, and they're not necessarily the same.
Right.
So what I would suggest is if you do choose to work with someone, make sure you know how they get paid, know what you're charged, that it's transparent, and know that these individuals are independent and not pushing products or selling particular investments that may not be in your best interest. But I definitely recommend hiring a coach, and that's what a financial advisor can be.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you help and work with folks outside of Virginia?
I do. We have clients in 37 states. I think I have clients in 35 states. I say we, I mean my whole firm. But
right.
We do. Clients often move in retirement. That's not unusual. Mm-hmm. So we have clients all over the country.
So you can assist folks no matter where they are?
Absolutely.
Excellent, excellent. We're going to get to all of your contact information in a moment. Now, another way that you reach out and educate folks is through your TV and radio programs, and you have had your show, Finance Rules, on our Speak Up Talk Radio network for the last 6 months, and I personally have enjoyed that and learned a lot. So tell us a little bit about your TV and radio programs.
Well, what we do is we tend to take the content that we write directly to our clients, which is usually timely. It centers around things going on in legislature or in tax rules or just in general planning strategies. And we write content to our clients. We then take those same pieces and we reproduce them on television spots and turn them into podcasts, because we think that the most important thing that you can do when it comes to finance is educating folks.
Yes.
So we tend to try and take very difficult topics and boil them down into layman's terms, everyday language, so that it's easily understood. And educate public.
Yeah, and you do a great job with that.
Thank you.
Now, is there anything else that you would like to discuss that will help to keep us financially healthy?
Well, I'm not exactly sure of every demographic that listens to your program, but let me just say, if you're under the age of 50 and you have the opportunity to consider the use of an HSA, which is a healthcare savings account, along with an HDHP, which is a high deductible healthcare premium, and you're fairly healthy, that is one recommendation I would make across the board pretty much to anybody in order to, what I'll say, front-load a virtual healthcare IRA. Now, it's not actually a healthcare IRA, but what it is it's tax-free dollars used to pay for future healthcare expenses, tax-free in the future. Can even be used to help pay long-term care premiums, but it also saves current cost of insurance as it makes your current insurance more affordable. It's not for everybody, so make sure it's appropriate for you. But if I could give you one nugget that somebody listening could take advantage of today, I would probably send that one out.
And what is that again?
A healthcare savings account along with a high deductible healthcare plan.
Okay, excellent, excellent. And obviously, if folks have questions or they want more information, they need to get a hold of you. So give us all of the contact information where they can find your TV shows and your radio shows and everything.
Oh, no problem. Our website is www.ebw, that's Echo Bravo Whiskey, Lincoln Charlie.com. And we have a section in our website that says In the News, which will take you to our PR website where we put all of our content for EBW Financial News Radio and our TV spots. Our address is 1919 Gallows Road. We are in Vienna, Virginia, Suite 980. And we can be reached. Probably the best way to do it would be via email. Just visit our website and you can send me an email.
Excellent. So it's EBWLLC.com, EBWLLC.com. I so appreciate your spending time with us today to help us stay financially healthy, and I look forward to more radio spots with you.
Thanks for having me.